I'm Marianne Kobusek-McGee, Executive Editor at ISMG Corp. Today I'm speaking with John Rigi, who is National Advisor for Cybersecurity and Risk at the American Hospital Association, and Josh Howell, who is Healthcare Chief Technology Officer at security firm Rubrik. We're going to be discussing how evolving cybersecurity trends are making it ever more important for hospitals to strengthen their cyber resilience. So, as we know, the healthcare sector is constantly hit with ransomware attacks that disrupt critical patient care services and other activities at hospitals. What's your assessment on how resilient hospitals and other healthcare providers are right now in terms of dealing with these disruptive attacks that can ultimately impact patients? Where are the weaknesses that you see? John, do you want to start?
Sure. Again, thanks for having me here today, Marianne. And unfortunately, and I think as you know, and all our listeners know, the threat landscape and the number of attacks against hospitals and health systems have increased pretty dramatically. And as much as we try to do to prevent these attacks, we really have to focus as much on resiliency and recovery. So one of the expressions that I've been stating lately, actually, probably for the past year or two, we talk about not only just, the old cliche, it's not a matter of if, but when, but the question is not a matter of if, but how prepared are you when a ransomware attack strikes? And it's just in this increasingly digitally complex, digitally interdependent ecosystem that healthcare operates in, there is no way for us to 100% prevent attacks and eliminate all the vulnerabilities which expose us to attacks. So we have to focus on that resiliency, especially in terms of the ability to provide patient care in the absence of technology. So we focus on the phrase clinical continuity. Really, it's a concept diverse from business continuity, which has been interpreted to mean reliance on IT folks to restore technology. Really, the question is, how well prepared are we to continue safe and quality care for 30 days or longer without the benefit of technology?
And I think, Marianne, to your question, this is a departure from the attacks or the issues that IT has dealt with in the past. For the last 20 years, we've been primarily focused on physical failures, fiber optics being cut or floods, earthquakes, disasters, and IT built a body of knowledge around how to conduct a failover in the event of a physical disaster. These attacks are different. Instead of physical damage, they do damage to your security context, and there is a loss of trust in, your production and DR environments because they're tightly coupled. And if we think about how the largest IT outage in the world, almost every organization was back online within a few days. But with cyber attacks, it's not unusual to see very extended recovery times. And so coming to terms with what is the damage that's done, and what are those success patterns? What are those foreseeable things that organizations can have in readiness? And then how do we bring together disparate teams to recover from them? The reason it's so difficult to recover from, say, a ransomware attack is because it requires so many disparate departments, groups, knowledge domains, skill sets, teams to all work smoothly when everything is at its worst. And that's something at Rubrik we've been really focused on, is helping organizations identify those success patterns for cyber resilience. And in many cases, it's not even necessarily that they need new, line items in the budget or a drastic increase in spend, as much as taking the money they're already spending it and using it in slightly different ways that help stack the deck in their favor so that they can speed run their recovery.
So typically, what sorts of areas are weak when it comes to the resiliency, where, a hospital or a healthcare provider, thinks that they're in a good state to deal with a potential attack, but then there are things that are commonly overlooked. And what can they do to address that? John, do you want to take that first?
Sure. And just kind of following on Josh's very salient comments, really, when we speak of business continuity and clinical continuity and the difference between the two, We really have to understand there's a technical component and a clinical and a process component for hospitals to be able to withstand, recover from a major ransomware attack. So on the clinical side, when we talk about clinical continuity, which has been somewhat overlooked because it's kind of a new concept for a lot of healthcare providers, it really focuses on the clinicians, their ability to provide care, safe and quality care, without the benefit of all that network and internet connected technology. So often in hospitals, we talk about downtime procedures, and everybody says, well, we've got those forms ready. But what we point out is the form is just that. It's an instrument to document care. It is not a process on how we diagnose a stroke patient without our PACS system available to transmit the image off the CT scanner. And how do we deliver radiation oncology without linear accelerators that need an internet connection to function? So that's the clinical side, for example. On the technical side, the key component that will help victims of ransomware attacks restore their services is having safe and secure backups, which can be used to restore. I've been talking about this for years, that is the last line of defense, that is the safety net for organizations, and it has a couple of benefits. One, it will help them restore clinical care. So it's a patient safety issue. Two, it will help the victim avoid paying a ransom if they have the ability to independently restore systems. So there's really some strategic benefits to that. We won't fund these groups. We won't incentivize them by paying ransom. But that is really where we've been focused on that resiliency and recovery piece, both on the technical side in the clinical care side.
And Josh, from your perspective?
So what John just said about, like, if they get your backups, you have no choice but to pay the ransom. And there's a lot of technologies out there. Every organization, every vendor claims that they are 100% immutable. And yet, the statistics that we see from third-party organizations, other public sources, people who would know, who respond to these types of events, continue to say that, 50 to 75% of the time, depending on which report you read, organizations lose at least part of their backup data due to the attacker's efforts. And that comes from a number of reasons, is that many of these solutions were designed to service IT's needs. Someone did something unfortunate, we need to put data back. They're very good at that. Where they're not so good at is when a talented attacker is behind your firewall for weeks at a time with domain admin level credentials and can do anything your IT team can do. If IT had to build it, the attackers can tear it down. And so when you think about if there is a back-end SQL database that can be attacked, or a way to log into a storage array, it's great that the backup software might be immutable in terms of it doesn't change the data, but if we can attack the storage array and delete the LUNs, now there is no more data in them. If we can manipulate the clock, and that backup software looks at the clock to determine when it should prune snapshots, that's a problem. We've seen that happen in the wild. Everything you can imagine, from destroying SQL databases, destroying the storage arrays, manipulating system time. There is extensive lists of things, and now we've seen nation state actors attack an organization, be able to fully log in as a, administrator, and yet be unable to destroy data in the Rubrik platform. And so, just the idea of needing a clean sheet redesign that is focused on security and deeply paranoid, and tries to account for every way in which a system can be accessed, I think sets apart true immutability from the others, and everything else comes from that. If you have backup data and you're well drilled in recovering your identity stores, so Active Directory, Entra, which is Active Directory for Azure, and then starting to restore those critical applications, you can drastically shrink the amount of downtime and the impacts to patients. So that's where we've made a name for ourselves.
I understand that Rubrik and the AHA are working together for basically helping hospitals with their resiliency. Tell us a little bit about what the work is that you're doing and what the program is. Josh, you want to start and then John?
Sure. So What we want to do is bring all of those lessons learned, right? Many of them have nothing to do with Rubrik, but we share the American Hospital Association's passion for trying to protect the quality of care that patients receive, but also the finances of US health systems. That money should not be extracted from our nation to fund things that are run contrary to American interests. And so at this point, we as an organization have helped hundreds of companies recover from ransomware. And there is a predictable series of events and steps that you can take to be prepared. So we've been working on literally interviewing everyone we can find who has lessons learned, aggregating those lessons, and working to share them with every health system we can talk to of here are practical, effective ways that you can pursue at very low cost to be better prepared. And I think being able to bring that body of knowledge to the American Hospital Association's members is something we are very interested in doing.
Thanks, Josh. And I have to say we're really proud to be partnered with Rubrik, and we've already seen the results of their solution help defend hospitals and mission-critical third-party providers. That if an attack had succeeded against particular mission-critical third-party providers, there would have been a systemic, a broad healthcare sector impact. And we know Rubrik helped prevent that and helped that entity recover quickly. Look, it's not just about protecting the hospitals. It's about protecting the patients that are in the hospital and the communities that we serve. Fundamentally, what we do and when we decide to partner with a firm like Rubrik, who I've personally vetted and we do recommend, is that they have to understand what's at stake. It's patient safety, patient care, and really the safety of all the community that depends on the availability of their nearest hospital. And if they're knocked offline by a ransomware attack and ambulances are on diversion with stroke, heart attack, and trauma patient, minutes, hours, days are critical for the safety of patients and communities. So when we look to partner with good firms like Rubrik, it's, as I always say to Josh and the team, it cannot be just about sales. It has to be about service. It has to be about mission. That's what we're all about here, and for the greater good. So again, very, very happy to be partnered with Rubrik.
And to John's point, we benefit tremendously. Even at a personal level, we have had Rubrik employees, have their first child in a hospital that was experiencing a ransomware attack. And days after they took their baby home, they got recalled because their child had a rare blood disorder. And the tests that would have normally been done at time of birth were delayed by a number of days, and thankfully it was something that was easily addressed after the fact. But now we have actually seen deaths attributed to delays in labs in other cases. And so this is where it gets personal. And my mother still works as an obstetrics nurse at 72. She loves what she does. My daughter is the next generation of nursing. And we've put together a wide variety of complementary workshops. Most of them have nothing to do with Rubrik, trying to help teams come together around what's the problem, developing a common vocabulary, developing a shared understanding of this is what it's going to be like, and then leading them through the process of, okay, what do we build? How do we prepare? What are the lessons learned? Just as a quick example, we've seen in some cases health systems be unable to work with key vendors for up to weeks after an incident because they hadn't whitelisted those organizations with their legal department ahead of an attack. So, as an example of a quick and easy lesson that every organization can take away is doing an inventory of every vendor, every third-party organization that's going to be able to materially help you recover and getting those pre-approved with legal so there aren't those delays. There's a tremendous number of insights we can bring to bear of quick, simple, low-cost ways to be better prepared for that attack when it comes.
Totally agree on that. And add to the fact that not only when you are looking at your own backup and restoration capabilities, but you should make the same inquiries and deep inspection of your mission critical and third party providers, mission critical and life critical third party providers. What are their restoration capabilities? What are they using for backup solutions? What is their RTO and RPO for them. So restoration time objective and restoration point objectives. And if they're knocked offline, we know the bad guys are going after these systemically important third parties. What do we think, or how long do we think it would take for them to restore? So to prevent that cascading impact to your organization and to your patients.
We hear so much about these powerful AI tools in the hands of attackers, especially tools that can help these attackers more quickly find and exploit vulnerabilities in hospital environments and in, obviously other environments as well. How does this raise the stakes of hospital resiliency? What are extra challenges or issues need to be addressed when you start adding some of these powerful AI tools in the hands of attackers? Josh, you want to start?
So it's going to raise the stakes for everyone, unfortunately. And I want to express some empathy in that I know the vast majority of the people I work with are doing their very best with the resources they have available to them. And right now, the US health systems in general are struggling for funding. And we anticipate with the cuts, this is going to become increasingly challenging. So there's that. There's also just the level of AI adoption in health systems. Just this morning, we had outreach from an organization who said, "Look, we just discovered we have 273 AI agents in use that we were unaware of." And that's not at all unusual. And when we think about it's not just the use of AI from outside the organization, the use of AI tools, but also the ability to weaponize that organization's own internal tools, whether that be IT tools or AI tools against them. Being able to get visibility into what's in use, who's using it for what things, what conversations are happening, what agents are running with what credentials that gives you access to what data, and then how that data is being changed, all goes back to can you recover and can you stitch together what happened in the wake of an incident. And so just even getting our own internal AI house in order with, like, we have a product, Rubrik Agent Cloud, that does what I just described of, like, what's being used, what are the credentials, what data is it touching, and how is that data being changed, would set a good foundation for dealing with attacks from the outside. But I think we're all a little bit in uncharted waters with things like Anthropic's Mythos. That is a scary, powerful tool that I don't know yet if there is an answer at or a, an un, an agreement on what that answer would even look like. So we're all learning.
John, what's your take?
Well, again, it is the continuing, I think, analogy, or at least the continuing expression of risk and reward when it comes to AI. So the risk, I think we know, are pretty extreme. Anthropic's Mythos in the wrong hands could wreak havoc across all of US critical infrastructure. But on the other hand, it is helping secure software and hopefully helping find critical vulnerabilities that are remain unknown at this point. But at the same time, whether it's Mythos or AI, some other AI program, the concern and the risk is how it's being exploited by the adversaries, not only to find technical vulnerabilities. We know that they're actively using it to scan internet software, but also to produce very convincing social engineering schemes to obtain credentials, high level, high privilege credentials. So on the one hand, when we start to, let's say, in a utopian world, find and fix all the vulnerabilities in software, the bad guys are already shifting tactics. They're trying to steal credentials. And then you utilize living off the land techniques to penetrate organizations. So, but again, on the other hand, AI is being used by organizations in a defensive measure to detect anomalous behavior by compromised credentials. So, as I always say, we will see how this goes. It's fast evolving, but let's make it clear, we are in the midst of an AI-fueled cyber arms race.
And I think, Marianne, something, now that I've had a little more time to think about it, the something John said kind of triggered my thought process here of, when we have incident response vendors like Mandiant talk about these, they talk about two different types of incidents. A type one incident where you detected something, you took voluntary downtime, you caught it early, and you got to stamp it out on your own terms, versus a type two incident where the attackers successfully took that first set of credentials that got stolen via social engineering, like John mentioned, and then they move laterally, escalate privileges, eventually get domain admin level access where they can do anything. And if at that point they get your identity stores, you can literally be locked out of your own infrastructure. And that creates a type two incident where you will probably not be able to recover to your existing environments. You're going to need an isolated recovery environment. It's going to incur extended downtime. So one of the ways that organizations can be better prepared is to have, the right monitoring, visibility, telemetry in place to see, where are their identity stores over-delegated? Where are their accounts that are exempted from MFA or password rotations? Where are their group policy changes being made unawares of the IT organization? And in those cases, the organization has a much better opportunity to detect it early, do something about it early, and as a result, incur a lot less downtime and financial penalties. One of the things I've been trying to help organizations understand is that the costs of these ransomware attacks is not the much mentioned $1.5 million a day. It is drastically higher than that. For your average health system, it would not be unusual to see losses in the high number of tens to several hundred million dollars over the first 5 years, easily. And for the largest system, those numbers go into the billions. So the imperative to take cyber resilience seriously and to make those shifts in spending and behavior and coordination is actually critically important, not just for patient care, but to make sure these health systems stay in business and continue to serve the populations that depend on them.
Thanks, Josh and John. I've been speaking to John Rigi and Josh Howell. I'm Marianne Kolbasek-McGee of ISMG. Thanks for joining us.